This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Good morning and welcome into WEEI just after 10 o'clock here on December the 31st, 2025. The final day of the calendar year, and we're pumped to be with you. Dan Ball with you alongside Justin Turpin. You may know him as Turp. You may know him as the gentleman who covers the Boston Celtics for WEEI.com, who runs Twitch and social for Jones and Keefe, who does just a little bit of everything. Turp, good morning. How are you, my friend?
I am great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I tell you, yesterday was an eventful day here on this station in Boston. It was myself, KJ, and Tom Carroll from 2 to 5 yesterday on the WEEI afternoon program, discussing something that I don't think any of us had on our bingo card. But before we get into all of that and what's coming up here on today's show, Justin Turpin, happy birthday, my friends.
Thank you. Thank you. Nowhere else I'd rather spend it, kick off the festivities with you here today.
Okay, so you're still a good liar, but I appreciate that either way. There we go. Happy birthday there, Turp. How old are we turning?
24.
Screw you, man. That's so unfair.
Right? It really is unfair.
24. Good morning, Jackson. How are you?
Good morning. I'm okay. I'm old and sad.
You look happy back there.
24 years old. Dude, you have done so much by age 24. Do you recognize that?
Sometimes, for sure. Yeah.
Like the stuff that you do covering the Celtics is second to none. And I mean the work obviously that you do promoting Jones and Keefe and building that brand and stuff is unreal. So I'm hoping at age 24 is the best one yet, man.
Dude, he created a job here for himself. When I got here, he was just like a fill-in guy, and
yeah.
And now he's like, I want to go see the Celtics in the playoffs, so I'm gonna create a job. And I'm just start writing stuff about them.
Shoot or shoot, they say.
That's true. That's true. Guys. Yeah. And in the radio industry, they said here's more money, which never happens. So that's unreal. But happy birthday, and we're pumped to have you here. Pumped to have everybody here, and you can join the conversation at 617-779-7937. It's a quick sprint here for Turp and I this morning, as we have wall to wall coverage of bowl season here on EEI via ESPN Radio. So we have the ReliaQuest and Citrus Bowls. This is one of the smallest schedules I've ever seen. ReliaQuest and Citrus Bowls, Iowa and Vanderbilt, and then Michigan and Texas, and then we have the Cotton Bowl at 7 o'clock tonight, Miami and Ohio State later on. So not one, not two, but three college bowl games coming up, beginning with coverage at 11:30. So we've got you from 10 until 11:30.
There's four people in Boston are you going to listen to?
Well, I mean, those are the four that we're happy to have with us here on WEEI, and we hope that they stick with us now and stick with us then as well. So what we're going to do here today, given that it's kind of it's a special event show, it's the last local show of the year here on the station, we're going to put together some of the pieces for a year in review for the Patriots, for the Celtics, for the Bruins, and for the Boston Red Sox, where the teams were when everybody opened their eyes on January 1st, 2025, to where they are now, with the ultimate conclusion for each being, are they better or are they worse off at the end of 2025 than they were at the beginning of 2025? We'll begin with the New England Patriots, and I want to quickly, address what we spent all day yesterday from basically 11:30 on discussing the Stephon Diggs allegations. Again, if you missed it yesterday, if you've been living under a rock, charged with felony strangulation or suffocation and misdemeanor assault and battery stemming from an incident on Tuesday, December 2nd. There has been no new information, no breaking information that has come with this. His arraignment date isn't until on January 23rd. The NFL has not issued a ruling on any of this yet. Not that I would really expect them to. We were going back and checking some of the historical context, trying to do something that's a bit inappropriate, which is compare situations like this. We went back last year. I took a look back to follow the chain of events for Jabril Peppers in 2024, and he was not placed on the exempt list by the commissioner after his arraignment, after he was officially charged, entered a plea, all that kind of stuff. So if that may be an example for how this ends up going in the NFL, it may not. That's just kind of the timeline that they took for that particular incident after the arrest, after he got his charges, all that kind of stuff. So, Turp, before we move on, anything kind of jump out as you were following this yesterday? Because this was certainly something that as Patriots fans were getting ready for Week 18 and hopefully a playoff run, you didn't quite have this on your bingo card.
It's just such a bummer.
Yeah.
Because everything's gone so smoothly this year. He's given you everything you could have asked for, both on and off the field. Obviously, he had the earlier issue with the boat video and all that, but they moved on past that. And
yeah.
He was been great on the field. So it's just so unfortunate that this happens, and it happens at this time with the arraignment date, like you were just talking about, set 2 days before the AFC Championship game.
Right, exactly. And the interesting kind of element that's still hanging over this is there is a petition that has been filed to move it back to March. So there, and we don't have any information as to whether that's been accepted or not. So there is a chance that this could be completely moved past the season, and it just becomes a thing that's dealt with in the off season. I wouldn't be surprised to see them move it, just given the individual involved, given that we're talking about a football player. Not to say that anybody should get any advantage over another. It's just a factor of the individual that's involved, and one of the factors that they're taking into account when making decisions. So I feel terrible for fans of the team, because and what we'll talk about in just a moment, the growth year to year, or beginning of the year to end of year for the Patriots, and for Diggs specifically as an individual who was brought in with a lot of question marks around him, was significant. And you feel for the other players and the members of the coaching staff and those who have been grinding and who need every single advantage possible to try to make the most out of this season. And now you're dealing with a cloud over your head that nobody would have expected even 48 hours ago.
And you just see how much they respect him and how much they resonate towards his leadership. He's the guy always breaking them down before the game, giving those pregame speeches. And the Patriots do a great job sharing those videos out and giving fans a look at it.
Right, right.
The way that they respond to him as a leader, and for this to happen, like you said, it's just kind of this gray cloud above the season right now as you get ready for the postseason. And to their credit, they have done a really good job in the past. When things do pop up, they do a good job kind of moving past it and putting it in the rear view and just focusing on the task at hand. And I think that's something Vrabel, you know, you trust him a lot with, just leading these guys in the right direction, keeping their head on straight. Like, it's not apples to apples, obviously, but like anytime there's been some sort of window for a letdown or some sort of distractions, they don't let it come in. And obviously,
right,
this is a much bigger one. This is a pretty serious situation, a very serious situation, and one that they don't want to be dealing with right now. But just the makeup of this team, you feel confident in them to just kind of, you know, let's focus on the task at hand. Like, there's nothing that they can do about it as a team. You kind of support him as much as you can, but, you know, that's all there is to it.
Okay, so we'll put a pin in that one for now. If there is any more information that percolates over the next 90 minutes, obviously we'll convey that to you, and that's just the most that we know at this point is what we spent a lot of time yesterday talking about. We have statements that are out from the attorneys, the representation for Diggs. We have a statement from the Patriots, both of which basically say, you know, Diggs categorically denies all of this.
And it's probably worth noting, Vrabel will meet with the media at 1:30 today.
Yes, exactly. So unfortunately, we won't be here to share that with you. Our expectation that we came away with on the afternoon show yesterday was you're probably not going to get anything more than the reiteration of the same statement, or probably something even less inflammatory, because the Patriots were very staunch in their support of Diggs. Diggs categorically denies this. We stand with Stephon. I would guess that Vrabel might be a bit less pointed in the statement that he gives. Just, we understand that. We know that it's an ongoing legal matter. You know, I'm not going to take any other questions at this time about it. And then he'll move things on to football matters. But there's also player availability that's coming up during the course of the week. That's usually when Diggs speaks by his locker. I would be shocked if they have him available for that. But those are some of the elements that are coming up. So we will get tidbits of information, but you'll probably get a whole lot of nothing burgers that come out from the rest of the press availability. So let's move on to the year in review for the New England Patriots outside of what's currently happening with the Stephon Diggs situation. January 1st, 2025, the New England Patriots Terp were at a very interesting crossroads as an organization, and they were quickly becoming a laughingstock of the NFL, because it's one thing to come out of the 23 season that would have been, and it's the end of the Belichick era. You've taken it as far as it can go, but clearly it's not working anymore. It's time to make a change. You promote your essentially head coach in waiting, and you're ready to usher in the next era of Patriots football. Instead of that, you base your culture and you seem to base your mission statement of the 2024 season on, we just need to not be the Belichick Patriots. We don't have
in any way possible.
Right. We don't necessarily have a culture. We don't have a sense of accountability. We don't really have a lot of pillars that we're striving for. We just know what we need to try to not be. And that was kind of the tone that was set during the course of 2024. So when we got into the beginning of this calendar year, the Patriots were kind of in a bit of a free fall at that point.
Yeah, I mean, think back last year, right? At this time last year, they had just lost to the Chargers 40-7. Drake May got knocked out of that game three plays in. He ended up coming back in the second quarter, and they were 3-13 on the year with the chance to get the number one pick with the loss in week 18. And now look at it. You have the coach of the year favorite, the MVP favorite, who's a 23-year-old, your quarterback, your franchise quarterback. Those two pillars are set in stone. And to the biggest point is the culture that you were just talking about.
Yeah.
How there was no culture. Now that culture has been set, it's been established, and it looks like it's here to stay for a long time. As long as Vrabel and May are here together, they have that. It's built, and the foundation has been laid. And this is in the first year. I don't know how you look at it. Mego and I were talking about it over the weekend.
Yeah.
I look at this as the year one of this rebuild. And I know people are like, oh, you've been rebuilding since Tom Brady left. You were rebuilding last year. But once you have the coach and quarterback in place, and that's the foundation, that is when the rebuild starts. I think once you move, think about all the turnover last year from the coaching staff, even the roster.
Like, yeah.
That's when the rebuild starts. And for them to be sitting where they are in year one of this rebuild, and even taking into account the Buffalo loss last week in the final week of the regular season, they have the most wins this calendar year, or tied for the most with the Seahawks and the Broncos. So that's pretty good.
That's nuts, first of all. And the fact that that win at the end of the season has any kind of impact on that stat is also wild. But I look at it as the restarting of the rebuild, or maybe the start of rebuild number two, with the implication that rebuild number one was a failure. You, in the back half of the Belichick regime into the Mayo regime, you tried to reset your franchise after Tom Brady with Mac Jones, with a number of failed draft picks all across the roster, most of whom are now members of other practice squads, if not out of the league completely. So I view that whole post-Brady era from when Belichick was there to the end of Mayo's regime as one failed attempt at a rebuild.
And long one.
A very long one and a very unsuccessful one that left you with next to nothing to build on except for a quarterback that you hope could turn into the guy long term. And I to your point about that, I view the Vrabel era as the beginning of rebuild number two of the Patriots. And this one has been one of the more successful rebuilds that you will see in any sport. Now, I mean, we can all look at the roster and recognize there's still plenty of progress left to be made. I think that wide receiver room is far from set. And, you know, given the news today and what could happen with Stephon Diggs, there, that might be a whole nother wrench in how they try to build that room out. Your run defense is a mess. You need some kind of elite pass rusher there to get some pressure on the quarterbacks. And I think you just need general depth around the roster. But all of those are kind of becoming semantics, or they're secondary points that you need to address, because, like you said, you have the coach and you have the coaching staff. You have an awesome coaching staff. And that was one of the things I looked at during the offseason and said, you've got a chance to compete and establish a culture and at least be respectable right off the bat, because you have four or five former head coaches on your staff. You have multiple people who have coached in significantly higher roles than they are on the Patriots. So you established your staff. The staff worked with the quarterback and clicked right off the bat, and you've established this culture of accountability, next man up, all this kind of stuff that we hear parroted back to us every single week. So this is, to me, is wave two of the rebuild. First was unsuccessful, but the second is yielding some unbelievable dividends this year.
It also helps with what they did in the offseason. Just go through their draft class. They hit on pretty much every player.
Yeah.
Same thing with the free agency class. And they went out and spent the more money than any team in the league this offseason and really went in to try to improve this team and try to get this rebuild on a fast track. The best way to do that is hitting in the draft. And that's why they were set back for so long, because for years they failed at building in the draft. And then they finally hit it this year. And just look how much it changes the team when you're able to hit on those. So, and that's a great point with the coaching as well. And we were talking about this over the summer, just looking at the coaches around Vrabel. Josh McDaniels, head coaching experience. Thomas Brown, obviously, was an interim coach, been there. Doug Marrone, who's done a great job with the offensive line. Like, they've had a lot of moving pieces on there. You have two rookies starting on your offensive line, and Doug Marrone's done a great job with that. So just the coaching staff, the foundation, the players that they've had in the draft class, I mean, that's just so important. They've hit on pretty much everything they did over the offseason.
The difference between the 2024 and the 25 draft classes is unbelievable when you read this out. Campbell, Travion Henderson, Kyle Williams, Jared Wilson, Craig Woodson, Joshua Farmer, Braden Swinson, Andy Borregales, Marcus Bryant, Julian Ashby, Kobe Miner. That's your group of 10 that you had in the 2025 draft. The quote-unquote worst that you've had is Braden Swinson, who's played two games, and Kobe Miner, who's played three. You're talking about a fifth-round pick and a seventh-round pick. You found your kicker. I thought they were crazy for keeping Andy Borregales after the performance in the preseason over Parker Romo. Nailed that. Even that ends up being good.
Andy helped Parker Romo help them win against the Falcons.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So you made the right decision twice. Marcus Bryant has been able to, even as a seventh-round pick, has been a fill-in swing tackle. He's played a couple snaps where he's needed to. Up and down the board, compared to, other than Drake May, obviously, Jalen Polk, Caden Wallace, Laydon Robinson, Javon Baker, Marcellus Dial, Joe Milton, and Jaheim Bell. That is zero, having zero impact on the 2025 Patriots versus a 25 class that is, I think, 1 through 10 having at least some kind of impact on this group.
Do you still look at the 24 class as a win, though, because you got Drake May? And I know it fell on their lap. There was four quarterbacks. It fell on your lap. You got Drake May.
A win for who?
Just the draft class in general. Like, you got your franchise quarterback for years to come, a guy that's looks like he's going to win MVP in his second year. I know the rest of it wasn't great. Most of them aren't even on the roster anymore.
Yeah.
But you got your franchise quarterback. And I feel like, as bad as it was, the fact that you leave with Drake May, that is the most important thing. That you got your quarterback. That foundation is laid. This guy, again, is going to win MVP at 23 years old in his second season.
Right.
I feel like that does kind of make it still a win just because of how good the quarterback is. It looks like you got the best out of the bunch.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
And that says a lot, because that was a deep quarterback class.
It was, yeah. And you had to wait and essentially get the quarterback that the other two teams decided, yeah, not good enough for me. I decided Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels was better, and you had Bo Nix and J.J. McCarthy waiting in the wings. So I will consider it, yeah, I see what you're saying, that I can consider that draft class a win because it is, I guess you could say that Drake May versus the collective group of 2025 draft, Drake has had the biggest impact of any player on the roster by far, obviously, on any part that's happened this year. But if I'm evaluating the performance of Elliott Wolf and Matt Groh,
pretty poor.
I'm not saying that's a win for my draft, those who lead my draft or my scouts, because that's just the pick that's sitting right there. You knew you needed a quarterback. I have to take a quarterback, so I took a quarterback. You did that at three, and then you whiffed on everything else in the remainder of the draft. So win for fans, yes. Win for the team, yes. Win for Vrabel, yes. Win for Elliott Wolf and Matt Groh, I can't go that far. I still think that's a botched draft where the one easy pick that you made, yes, you did nail that pick.
And again, that's what set them back for so long.
Right.
That's why they were in this position in the first place, because they couldn't hit those drafts. But you do get the quarterback. I do think that validates it a little bit. And again, I understand that it kind of fell on their lap. It was right there. The other two made the decision easily for you because you just got the third quarterback that fell down. But it just so happened to be the best of the bunch.
401 calls it the Vrabild.
I like
which I'm in on.
I'm in on that.
I'll use that. 508, they get zero credit for me because he was there at three. If it was Daniels, they would have taken him. So no, no credit for drafting Drake May. It was just who was there. Yeah, I think it depends on who you're giving the credit for. Who's considered the win. Certainly a win for fans and for the franchise and for the future of Patriots football and all that kind of stuff, but not necessarily a win when you're evaluating should I be giving power to Elliot Wolf? Should I be giving power to Matt Groh? Is that the way that we should be going as an organization versus should I be giving more power to Stretch or to, you know, the other individuals that Vrabel brought into the front office, Ryan Cowden? So that's kind of where I fall on that. But so we started 2025 with the Patriots fighting for the number one overall pick, being a joke and kind of having a lack of a direction as a franchise.
The only bright spot was the quarterback.
Right.
That was and the even only then, thing you knew. And even then he had questions.
But yeah, and I think even your use of the word no might be a little bit of a stretch. I thought there might be something here. I thought, yeah, at its very best, maybe he's a poor man's Josh Allen. But I saw a kid that couldn't sit in the pocket and pass. I saw a guy that was making way too many college-level mistakes, throwing into double and triple coverage, putting the ball on the ground, all those kind of things that if you didn't pair him with the exact right coach and give him some protection quickly on the offensive line, I saw a guy, coming from New York, I covered Daniel Jones for years, and I saw a guy that this is about to be another Jones if you don't
Sick
get him.
Brag, bro.
Thank you, and believe me, it wasn't. And that's kind of what I saw playing out with this guy based on how he performed last year, and I'm thankful that I was wrong because he's turned into the best quarterback in the NFL and probably the MVP of the league as well. And the MVP of 2025 for the New England Patriots is?
Drake May.
Okay, yeah, that's probably fair. I think there's a very good argument, obviously, for Vrabel in the quick reestablishing of a new and improved culture. I think there's a big argument for Josh McDaniels for what he's done for Drake and for that offense being able to put together a lot of spare pieces into something that works pretty well. But yeah, from start to finish, it's probably Drake without much of a conversation around it.
There are only two coaches in NFL history with more than 13 wins in their first season, and Vrabel will probably get to 14 and tie both George Seifert and Jim Caldwell.
Yeah.
This week. I mean, you'd imagine it'd have to go very poorly for them to lose because they still have to win. They have to win this game to secure the number two.
So right, right.
You'd imagine he gets to 14 and he's up there for the most in the first year in NFL history. That's pretty good.
I think it's going to play out pretty similarly to how we saw last week, where I think they're going to beat the brakes off of them in the first half. And in reading some of the reporting, I saw Mike Reese talking about this on Twitter. After halftime, you might start to see some of the starters check out, depending on how the game is going. So that would be my guess and my hope that they have win number 14 secure by, you know, midway through that third quarter. You get a drive or two for the starting offense, and then you'll leave it there. It's very hard to pick a least valuable player or personnel member. We knew what it was at the beginning of 2025. It was the easy – well – it probably wasn't easy at the end of 2024 because there was a lot to choose from. But how do you pick an LVP for the New England Patriots?
I don't think you really can.
Like, yeah.
The team, except if they had won two winnable games at the beginning of the year, they would be the one seed right now.
Yeah.
After having the third pick of the draft, fourth pick of the draft. Like, it's tough to pick one. But I think it would have to be Jerod Mayo just for costing them the number one pick, I guess.
Yeah. I think so. Joe Milton for costing them the number one pick, and Joe Milton for the months worth of mind numbing conversation of Drake May versus Joe Milton that we had to have.
How ridiculous was that? Like, that's just looking back. Like, was that was seriously people believed that? People actually believed that Joe Milton was better than Drake May.
Yeah,
because he did backflips and threw the ball far.
Right, exactly. Because
that was it.
He is a cannon of an arm, and you can't take that away from him. Does he know where it was going? No.
And he beat the Bills in pretty much what was a preseason game.
The Bills. He was beating the University of Buffalo. He was beaten last
week. Ridiculous. That was actually a conversation. Like, people were like, "Oh, could Joe Milton push Drake May to be the starter?"
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I mean, we were also coming off of the Mac Jones versus Bailey Zappi debacle. So maybe people love people love Bledsoe and Brady. Everybody loves the underdog story.
Everyone loves the backup quarterback.
Right.
Just period. It's the best job in sports.
It is the best job in sports. And specific to New England, there's always going to be the chance that your franchise superstar is sitting on the bench. There's always going to be that little nugget in the back of your head that goes, well, maybe we're not playing the right guy because we had unprecedented amounts of success when we weren't playing the right guy in years past. So it is very hard to pick, but 2026, that involves the end of the regular season into the playoffs, and that also involves most of the 2026 NFL season with the draft and free agency involved. What does the next calendar year look like for this team?
Well, hopefully it has a playoff win in there.
Right.
I mean, we were talking about it last time we were on, like, looking at this, the AFC playoff picture, like, there's really no teams that scare you. It looks like you're going to get the Chargers. Like, are you really scared of the Chargers? They've lost both their tackles.
Right.
Justin Herbert's getting hit at a ridiculously high rate. They also falter in the playoffs every single year. They're not a good playoff team, so I don't really worry too much about them. Like, just hope they can keep riding this magical run that they're on. And again, it looks sustainable just because of the culture they've built, because you have the quarterback. And obviously the injuries and the off-the-field issues now, like, piling up a little bit. The injuries are very unfortunate. Like, they're going to miss Mac Hollins a lot.
Big time.
Like,
yep.
Big time. I'd go as far to say, like, they'll miss Mac Hollins more than they would have Jared Wilson or Will Campbell combined in the playoffs. Like, that, he was so good for them this season. And obviously he can come back if they make it to the AFC Championship game, but you're focused on one game at a time. So you're going to miss Mac Hollins. And obviously, like, you're hoping Spillane can come back and be healthy. Milton Williams, Will Campbell, like, the injuries kind of piled up late in the season, which you wouldn't like to see. But looks like guys are going to be on the field and be ready to go. So you worry a little bit about that, but you hope they can win a playoff game. Like, if you even win one, you win the division and you win a playoff game in the first year of the rebuild, you feel really good about where you're at.
Absolutely. And this has already been a success of a year, but if you can tack that onto your resume and get good playoff experience for some of your younger guys and your second year now going into his third year quarterback, then that is absolutely valuable. 617-779-7937. You can join the conversation. Who's your MVP, LVP, and what's your 2026 prediction for the New England Patriots? We'll continue on that line of thinking for the Celtics, for the Bruins, for the Red Sox after Jackson gets you caught up on what's trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Hey now. Trending brought to you by Mario's Roofing. We won't soak you to keep you warm and dry. The Patriots, they will play the Dolphins on Sunday. And if they get the win and Denver loses or ties, they get the number one seed. And then if they tie and Denver loses, they still have the number one seed. So looking okay. The Celtics beat the Jazz 129-119 last night in Utah. Derek White led all scorers with 27 points. And the Bruins take their six-game losing streak on the road to play the Pacific Division leading Oilers. Puck drops at 9:30 in Edmonton. And oh yeah, your star receiver for the Patriots, Steph Diggs, is facing felony strangulation or suffocation charges. He denies the charges, and the team is supporting him for right now. And today on WEEI, you have a slate of good college football games. We start with the ReliaQuest Bowl with Iowa versus Vanderbilt, then the Citrus Bowl, Michigan versus Texas, and it rounds off with the playoff QTRS Cotton Bowl. Okay, yeah, Miami versus Ohio State. I'm going to get fired. I'm Jackson. This is what's trending on WEI, brought to you by Mario's Roofing. Homeowners choose Mario's Roofing because they're fair, honest, and provide quality services. Call Mario's Roofing today for a free estimate at 781-344-2420.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Back here on WEEI, it is Jones and Keith. Except it's not Jones and Keith. It's Ball and Turpin with you up until 11:30. We get you in the full coverage of college football bowl season via ESPN Radio at that point. We just spent a good chunk talking about the New England Patriots and their 2025 calendar year. Were they better or were they worse? That one was about as easy of a they're better answer as you can have. Let's get to the team that you spend most of your days covering for this radio station and just watching in general while you're not actually just playing hoops somewhere in Braintree. That's the Boston Celtics. Where were the Boston Celtics at the beginning of 2025.
Well, they had just beaten the Toronto Raptors by 54 at home. It was a very fitting end to what was a dominant 2024 calendar year. But
yeah,
this is where they started to slip a little bit. It was early December where they started to get into that win one, lose two, win two, lose one kind of inconsistent rut. And you were like, you pass it off as like, you know, they're coasting through the season. Like, that's what every former champion does. You know, they know how good they are. They had an unmatched level of continuity. They brought 15 of the 17 players from the championship team back.
It's right.
Like, these guys know what they're doing. They've been there. They've done that. Turns out, you know, those were some red flags. I mean, they finished the season strong. They went 29-6 over the final 35 games of the year.
Yeah.
Had 61 wins. It was the most by a reigning champion since 2016 Warriors, and you know that team went to the NBA Finals. The only other team that had 60-plus wins in their reigning champion season were the Miami Heat when they went to the NBA Finals. So both of these teams went back to the Finals, and that was the expectation. The expectation was for them to get back to the NBA Finals.
And they looked like they were ramping up to getting from, again, like you talked about, kind of staying on easy mode during the course of the dog days of the regular season. Oh, they're finding their stride, they're getting into playoff form, and they know how to win when they get there. So what's the problem when they get to the playoffs?
And then they're kind of limping in. Like, Drew Holiday gets hurt in round one. He misses three games. Jaylen Brown, towards the end of the regular season, had that partially torn meniscus he was playing through, kind of saw bits and pieces of where he was really not himself. And Kristaps Porzingis, I think, to me, that was the most important one. Obviously, before Jason Tatum went down in game four, like, that was the most important one, where Porzingis was supposed to be the guy that when the offense goes cold, like, he's the one to get them back on track.
And yeah,
he's dealing with this mysterious respiratory illness that comes out to be POTS later on, and it was giving him breathing issues, and he was all this wild stuff going on with him. So it's tough to look back at 2025 for the Celtics and look like it was a good one. I mean, you had a championship team that the numbers on that team with the top six of Drew Holiday, Kristaps Porzingis, Tatum, Brown, Horford, Derek White, they were 100 games over 500. They were 147-47 if you include the playoffs.
And I mean, that's historically good.
They were historically good, yeah. And they bowed out in the second round, a lot of it because of injuries, but you also blew two 20-point leads. It was the first team in the play-by-play era, which is from like the 1996 on, to blow back-to-back 20-point leads. And they were both at home.
Right, and you blew them with Tatum still healthy.
Right.
You were going to lose that series regardless of if he got, or it certainly looked like you were going to lose it regardless.
Did. Even in game four when Tatum goes down. And like, that's one of the worst injuries that an athlete can suffer.
Oh, no doubt.
It happens to your 27-year-old superstar who's entering the peak of his powers. Like, especially towards the end of last year, like, that was the best Jason Tatum has ever looked.
Oh, he was entering face of the league territory at that point.
Right.
Especially if they found a way to win again.
And, you know, I'm confident, I think a lot of people locally are pretty confident, that he's going to come back and eventually be himself again. It's going to take some time, right? There's the mental hurdle and all that stuff. You got to relearn your body. You got to trust yourself again and all that. And we're pretty confident he's going to return to that. But it's not hyperbolic to say, like, that is one of the most damning injuries in franchise history.
Yeah.
Like, it was a big contributor to the decision. And obviously, it was going to happen anyway. Wick Grosbeck talked about it on these airwaves last March. Teams can't live in the second apron. That's just the reality of the NBA. So it was already going to happen, but I don't know if it happens as much as it did with Jason Tatum still healthy. Like we said, this team was 100 games over 500.
Just
ridiculously consistent and dominant. So it's tough to look at 2025 as a good year for the Celtics, just with what they've lost.
In a vacuum in 2025, absolutely, yeah, versus where we thought this franchise was versus where they are right now. I mean, you just surely look at the personnel. Look at the five-man group on any given night that the Celtics are starting, and you go, what the hell happened to the Boston Celtics? Can I, however, argue, and you can tell me if this is just me looking for positivity for the sake of it, can I argue that the Celtics are, with the sale to Bill Chisholm, the financial maneuvering they're now doing, are the Celtics positioning themselves for a better 2026 through some of the steps backwards that they've taken in 2025?
No doubt.
Okay.
That's how it is now with the second apron.
And maybe beyond 2026, I could even say.
Right. You can't stay in it. So you're going to dip out of it, and then you're going to go back in. Like, that's just how the league is designed now. So kind of, in a way, worked out for the Celtics. And obviously, you never want to see a player go down, especially Jason Tatum, and have that's kind of injury. But in the sense that they were going to have to do this anyway.
Yeah.
And I guess it made it a little bit easier to do it when Jason Tatum goes down, because that's your best player. And as good as Jaylen Brown has been, like, he's been phenomenal stepping up. And especially this month, he's been so dominant. Like, There's no way he doesn't win Eastern Conference Player of the Month. Just what he's doing is ridiculous. He scored 30-plus in 12 of his last 14. And the only two games that he didn't get 30, he had 10 assists. Like, he's playing at an all-NBA level. But when Jason Tatum goes down, it just changes the outlook of what this team is going to do. And they, like I said, they were going to have to do this anyway. So, yeah, it is looking at 2026, though, you do feel good about what you have. Because the biggest point of emphasis this year was to figure out what you had on the roster moving forward. And
right.
Looking up and down, like Hugo Gonzalez, like when they're doing redrafts in a couple years of last year's draft class, he's going to be much higher in those conversations.
Top 10?
We'll call it 15 for now. We'll call it 15 for now.
Yeah.
But he's going to be up there. Like, he just has these great instincts for a 19-year-old, too. Just a defensive menace. He's smart with the basketball. So he's going to be up there. You obviously found something with Jordan Walsh. And it's not crazy to say that this was a make-or-break year for him this year. Like, I know he didn't have a ton of opportunity. He was drafted at 19, playing behind, like we just said, this historically great team. There wasn't going to be much opportunity. But behind the scenes, he was developing, and he's now developed into a starting player for this team. And I don't think he's a starter moving forward for when you're, you know, when you have another team that's hoping to contend for championships. I don't think he's a starter on that team, but he can certainly be a great role player and a great bench player that comes in and takes the load off guys like Jaylen Brown, who, think about that 2024 run. Like, he was the one that picked up the best player on every given night. Look at Luka Doncic. Like, he tortured that guy in the NBA Finals.
Yes,
he did.
And
on the other end, he's dropping like 20 points a game. So you're kind of taking that off Jaylen Brown now, where you have a guy like Jordan Walsh and Hugo Gonzalez that can go in and be these defensive menaces. And same thing with Cato. Like, there are a lot of questions about what he can be this year, and he's developed into a rock-solid starting center for this team. And just up and down the roster, you feel confident in the pieces you have, but you are still a couple away. And that's when you see them make different moves this offseason and start spending again, surround this team with more talent, and gear up again for hopefully another championship.
Texture from the 401 disagreed that Jason Tatum was becoming face of the league status. He finished the season fifth in scoring among all players last season, or among qualifiers, you can say, with 26.8 points. And he was coming off of a championship and was slated to be the star who went back-to-back if things went according to plan. So I think that's, especially in an era, I've talked about this with others before, and I know we got to take a break, so I'll get this out quick. We went through an interesting era in basketball where you had the LeBron Durant era of superstars that were the faces of the league. And now we're entering into a, you know, Luka Doncic, Jason Tatum, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander,
Wembanyama, Anthony Edwards.
Right. And it's a great time for young stars. But there was this gap in the middle of failed number one overall draft picks, like right before the Tatum class happened, where you kind of had a vacuum where it was just the LeBrons, the Currys, the Durants into their mid-30s being the face of the NBA. So I think there has been a drastic need for a new face of the NBA. I think the league would say as much. And he was absolutely becoming a guy like that. He's top 20 in Instagram followers, if you want to do it by how popular he is. Like, that is
top
a guy.
Five in jersey sales,
yes,
I believe it was last year.
Like, that is a guy who, for sure, on the Boston Celtics, that's the biggest amplifier of them all, is that you're the star of the Boston Celtics.
And part of the face of the league discussion falls on the NBA. And they held on to these superstars for too long. The Currys, and they're still great players, and obviously people gravitate towards them, and you want to promote them. But I think, like, a perfect example is last year. Everyone knew the Thunder were going to be good. They were going to be one of the best teams in the league. They didn't play them on Christmas. That's the NBA's
right.
marquee day, and
right.
you don't play the Thunder on Christmas. Like, that's the NBA getting its own way, which happens a little bit too much. And a couple weeks ago, we saw it when the Celtics and Lakers played. Like, that's their... They pin this as the historic rivalry, one of their best rivalries in basketball. They schedule it on a back-to-back for both teams, LeBron James, Luka Doncic. None of those guys play. And obviously, Luka's situation was different. But, like, LeBron only has a couple more.
Yeah. Marcus Smart didn't play.
And he's been dealing with injuries, too. But, like, these guys don't play. And the NBA could have alleviated some of these issues by just giving them a day in between the games. But, they tie it up with the NBA in-season tournament, so the schedule's so congested. Like, the NBA really doesn't do itself any favors when we're having these conversations. Like, I just can't get over the Thunder didn't play last year. Like, you
right.
knew they were going to be good. They had the MVP. SGA was going to be up there, and they don't play. They don't showcase him, and it's a smaller market team, already hard to find. And then when they're playing the Celtics, a team that people thought they were going to see in the NBA Finals, they matched up with Week 18 of the NFL season. They're on, like, league pass. Gerard Mayo gets fired. Nobody cares.
Right.
Like,
right.
That's just like, what are we doing?
617-779-7937, continuing our year in review here on Jones and Keefe. Ball and Turpin in for the guys. We hit the Boston Bruins next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Back here on WEEI, New Year's Eve morning. We appreciate you being with us. We got college football action coming up beginning at 11:30 via ESPN Radio, so keep it locked for that. In the meantime, you can join us at 617.
I can't wait. I'm going to be listening to every single game.
779-7937. Sick brag, bro. That's our guy Jackson back behind the glass. Dan Ball, Justin Turpin with you. The Boston Bruins last season, Terp, right around the end of the calendar year, December the 31st, lost to Washington by a score of 3-1. They would proceed to lose their next six games, and they would score either one or zero goals in four of those six games. So, ironically enough, at the end of the 2024 calendar year and at the beginning of 25, I think the reality for the Bruins began to set in. The reality that the window of winning a championship, one that was extended far longer than I thought it was going to. This is past the departure of Zdeno Chara, past the departure of David Krejci, the will-he-won't-he retirement of Patrice Bergeron, and the departures of very important secondary characters in championship caliber teams, guys like Andrew Ferentz and Johnny Boychuk and Nathan Horton and, you know, Milan Lucic before the off the ice stuff started to happen, guys in Tuukka Rask and guys that were so crucial to obviously the on ice success, but also the off ice big bad Bruin mentality that became something that was really, really difficult to play against. I think last year around this time, the reality started to set in. You had already gone through your coaching change. You knew that you were going to be hiring somebody new at the end of the year. And I think the reality started to set in that it's time to make some more drastic changes and admit that it's time to start to retool this roster and do things more drastically. This is right around when the conversation of should we trade Brad Marchand really started to get amplified. And the trading of Brad Marchand officially signaled the end of an era for the Boston Bruins. So they are skill-wise, they are, you know, veteran talent-wise, worse off right now than they were a year ago, no doubt. But I do like the direction of the Bruins a lot more now than I did then. Because for the first time in a very long time, we're talking about promising prospects. We're talking about a coach who I think has a good read on this team and a good feel for the room and things like that. It's not perfect. It may not work. And I didn't like some of their spending during the offseason, but the Bruins accepted what they were, which was no longer a championship contender, and did something about that. And so that was actually, for me, a tremendous positive to come out of 2025.
And I think what you just hit on is the most important part, accepting what they were. They were so strung and so tied to this core for so long. And year after year, they just kept underachieving.
Yeah.
At some point, you had to rip off the Band-Aid and move on. And obviously, when you do that, there's going to be a transition period. And that's what we're in right now. But you mentioned the prospects they have, and it seems like Sturm really has a good grasp on this group. And he's clicking, pushing a lot of the right buttons. They seem to be buying in on his message and what he wants this team to do. So I know it's tough to look at them right now, and they probably are overachieving a little bit. Like, people didn't think they were going to be as good as they have been,
at least
early on.
God, no.
But I think the most important thing that they did was realize that this isn't going to work. We've been trying. They even tried last year. They brought in Zadorov and Lindholm. They went out and spent money, tried to give this one more push, give it one more run. I mean, what was it, 3 years ago they set the points record? They were supposed to go all the way to the cup final. Like, they were the favorite. and they get bounced in, what, the first round in seven games. Like, that can't happen. And eventually they did realize what they were, and that's the most important part in moving on and just ripping off that Band-Aid.
Yeah, under Montgomery in that first year, 65-12-5, 135 points, win the President's Trophy, bounced in the first round. Next year, 47-20-15, under Montgomery, losing the second round. Last year, you fire Montgomery, Sacco's your interim, he goes 25-30-7. They, as a team, go 33-39-10, and they at least picked a direction at right around this point in the season going into a pivotal trade deadline. And now you can kind of see, all right, it's going to be a little while before we play competitive hockey. But you knew last year that they were leaving their championship window. They just hadn't capitalized on it. And in a salary cap world that's so crunched, you had to be able to get young, cost-controlled rookies and prospects on these entry-level deals that allow you to spend money in different ways. So now in a couple years, you're going to have James Hagans, who looks like a can't-miss prospect, Will Zellers, who is maybe the player of the tournament in the World Juniors right now, goal per game pacer near that at North Dakota, Pasternak on a good deal, Morgan Geeky on maybe the best deal in hockey right now.
Yeah.
And I think in 2 years, you're going to have somewhere around $40 million to spend. So that's really when your window reopens. It's not this year, and it's not 26-27, but I think it's 27-28 where you really get a chance to compete. MVP of the year for me is Morgan Geeky. What he has become versus what you thought he was going to be when you brought him in, it has been unbelievable. LVP, unfortunately, I think it's Charlie McAvoy. I'm really disappointed with the steps that he just hasn't taken as a guy who was supposed to be your number one set it and forget it defenseman. But I think 2026 is another step along the line of a retool for the Bruins. I think that's where this goes.
Yeah, I can't argue with the Morgan Geeky MVP. Where did this come from?
I don't know.
This just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, he was a good player, but he was with Carolina, then went to Seattle in the expansion draft and was just like, he wasn't even playing every game. He was just a, you know, third, fourth liner, kind of fit in, but never really fit in a role. Didn't have a role with either one of his franchises that he was with in the past, but now he's become a superstar in this league.
And much like the Celtics conversation, like when you're in this transition period, I don't know what the Bruins are calling it. The Celtics calling it the retooling era here this season. The most important part is figuring out what you have and who can contribute to when you want to compete again. And it looks like he can certainly be one of those players. Swayman's also been better this year, too.
Yeah.
What's behind him? That's a little bit of an issue.
It is. And that's something you got to address. 617-779-7937. Continuing our year in review for the teams in Boston sports. Let's yell about those Red Sox next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.